Welcome to the Distraction Makers Podcast. I'm Gavin.
I'm Forrest.
I'm Tyler.
In this episode, we talk about Blizzard, Dreamhaven, and what might be next for one of our favorite game companies. Well, I think that, I guess we should just hop into it. So, like, Blizzard has had a lot of criticism in the last couple years. I mean, as far as...
Like, I'd say more than a couple.
Probably longer than that. But the thing that comes to mind first and foremost is, like, there was kind of this simmering feeling that things weren't quite right. And then Diablo Immortal announcement, I feel like, was the big moment of, like, oh, this is... They feel like they're completely out of sync with their core audience.
I don't know. That one was weird to me because that was everybody's expectation was the announcement for Diablo 4, right? And then they just, you know, it was Diablo Immortal, which was made by a different company, that they're just kind of presenting with the the Diablo shell. And then it was just like everybody's disappointment because they had it. They were so everybody was. That's how I saw it from the outside.
I think
it just seemed like everybody wanted Diablo 4.
Sure.
But like Blizzard didn't promise anything like that.
I think the thing that's the weirdest is that they decided to announce that game at BlizzCon, right? Like, I think that's where the disconnect is if you understand what your core audience is looking for, you're going to know your core audience is who's going to be at BlizzCon. And then you announce a game that's a mobile Diablo. Like, nobody that's there is probably interested in that game. Especially to sort of tease it out as like, oh, look, it's Diablo something. Oh, maybe.
Not only did they announce it at BlizzCon, it was the last announcement. At
oh my
BlizzCon,
God! Okay, I didn't know that.
Which That's, is saved, yeah, but... obviously, for the most special of things. and
that was Diablo Immortal.
Right, and I think so. I talked to a couple people internally about this, and it seemed like. One, obviously, when you are making a game, you don't expect your game to be seen badly.
Oh, sure,
we make
games,
right? And like, we're super passionate about it and excited, maybe nervous, but you don't ever expect to be booed if you present something new to the world. Right.
And that's a really weird, I'm sitting here going like, what a weird disconnect, right? Like, you're passionate, you're making this game, you're into it, you think it's good. And then you announce it to an audience and everybody's like, what is this? Nobody wants it, right?
Like, it's like, we wanted this other thing.
I feel really bad for the developers that worked on this game and had that reaction. Yeah. But I guess the thing that's weird is, okay, let's look at Diablo Immortal now. Like, it's out, right? I would imagine it's been out for a while.
No, it's not
still
out.
Not? Okay, maybe they canned it. But I'm sitting here going, that product in the broader scope of gamers, of the gaming industry, is probably going to do very well.
Yeah.
So you've got this core audience who's at it really to me was just like somebody in marketing not understanding who their target audience is and who like that there wasn't enough overlap there between who was at BlizzCon.
What was funny is shortly after this BlizzCon, I think it was in December, or it might have been a year, the next December afterwards, Riot Games ended up having, I think it was their 10-year anniversary. For League of Legends or something like that. Maybe it was 15. And that 15-year or 10-year anniversary that they had was just a live stream.
Yeah.
And they started the live stream off by, first of all, hinting that there's things to come.
Right.
But they said initially, like, to get this out of the way, let's announce our mobile version of League of Legends.
Right.
It was a warm up to the announcements.
Yeah.
And they talked they you can tell in the way they talked about it. It was very pointed at Blizzard. Like, why didn't you guys do this? Like, why would you save it for the end?
Yeah.
And then at that same time they announced. Let's see. They announced Valorant, which has been a huge hit since then.
Sure.
They announced their action RPG. They announced an animated series. I think they announced a bunch of indie collaboration games that they're working on with studios. And then they announced Legends of Runeterra as well, which I think also ended up having a beta that same day or something. It was like a huge,
it was
bigger than BlizzCon and cost way less.
Yeah,
it was weird. I think like Blizzard just wasn't, I don't know what else like they announced that year. I just remember Battlegrounds. That's all I cared about. But like,
yeah,
I don't remember any other big announcements. But like, I think they just didn't have anything to really announce yet. They didn't want to announce Diablo 4 yet because that was coming out the next year.
I could see. Or they're
announcing it next year.
I could see people like who are working on Diablo Immortal going, man, isn't it going to be really cool to be able to play Diablo 3 on your phone? Like, oh, I'm on the train, I'm on the bus, I'm you know, waiting in line somewhere. I can play Diablo on my phone. Like, it does sound kind of cool if you look at it in the abstract, but like, that game had been so fraught with controversy already that I'm like, anybody who's still playing Diablo 3 is not going to be excited that now they can just play it on their phone. But at any rate, like, I think this is sort of like getting at a bigger problem that I think might be going on with Blizzard, and you know, the recent news of Mike Morhaime announcing that he's making his own studio after he left Blizzard. Like, this news I think is fairly recent at this point, right? Like, I heard about it today, but it may have come out.
It's been a couple days.
A couple days.
I mean, they not only did Mike Morhaime find this, I think three ex-members of the Hearthstone team, Hadijo was senior VFX artist, Jason Kim, senior concept artist, Ben Thompson was the art lead, basically, on the project. Yeah. They got Kate Welch, who was a game designer for Dungeons & Dragons at Wizards of the Coast.
Oh, interesting.
Which threw me off.
Yeah.
And there's just like this huge all-star cast of people in the industry that came totally out of left field. I didn't see coming at all. It was a huge announcement.
Yeah, I didn't realize it was that. I knew it was a lot of people from Blizzard, and I didn't realize it was people like they're pulling like talent from everywhere. Right? It's like, okay, all these different people from different areas. They're opening it in Irvine, so it's literally like next door to Blizzard. Mm-hmm. It's clearly being like staged as
it's a coup.
We're not happy with what's going on.
He left a little while ago, and he only announced the
Mike
new game Morhaime? Studio. Right?
I thought it was a few years ago. I thought it was like 2017.
He stepped down as CEO 2 years ago, I think, maybe last.
Oh,
year.
He hadn't left yet though.
And it took about 6 months for him to finally actually wane off and actually leave the studio. Mm-hmm. It was as he kind of like, I guess, was prepping J. Allen Brack for taking over the position. But chances are, and I think this is common actually for a lot of Blizzard employees, there's a lot of people that leave Blizzard or leave Riot and they go and start other studios. The people that made Dauntless were ex-Rioters. The people that made Spellbreak, I think, were mix of ex like Blizzard ex-Rioters.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken. Like, it's a very common thing to have happen. And these are only the ones we've heard of. I've worked for studios that went under before they could even get going.
Yeah.
Because they were ex-Blizzard people that they get some investor money, they start up, and they just don't, you know, hit the ground running like other studios do.
Mm-hmm.
It's a super common thing to see happen. Second Dinner is another studio. It's all ex-Hearthstone people.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting to see that starting to happen because, like, you can see the disconnect between the core audience of Blizzard and also the disconnect between the developers and the designers who are working for Blizzard. And like, there's almost this two ships passing in the night problem that's happening. And I'm wondering if these people are jumping ship and they're making their own companies. And obviously with the new company that Mike Morhaime has founded is Dreamhaven, but it's also like it's Dreamhaven,
two studios.
Well, but they're under the Dreamhaven umbrella, right?
Right.
Okay, yeah. So, which is interesting because I'm like, okay, what is Dreamhaven a publisher then? I guess it is, right? Like, there's studios, and then Dreamhaven's just helping publish them.
Maybe let me look it up.
Okay, we'll fact check it real time.
Cut this out.
But I'm curious if Blizzard is going to, I guess Blizzard. Let me in quotes. Or I guess Dreamhaven is Mike Morhaime going to be able to capture lightning in a bottle twice? Because Blizzard showed up on the scene and revolutionized computer gaming when there was like kind of nobody else that, I mean, not nobody, but like they were doing things that nobody else was doing yet. They made the first action RPG, you know, that they've got an RTS, which is heavily inspired by Games Workshop, but you know, with Warcraft, And then they started building a world between Warcraft 1 and 2 and 3, and then World of Warcraft comes out. And I'm sitting here going, okay, well, they're starting from scratch at this point, which is probably a blessing and a curse, right? Like, they've had these years to build up these franchises, Diablo, StarCraft, Warcraft, and I guess now Overwatch. But I'm just sitting here going, what does this look like? Like, what is their first title coming out of the gate, and are they concerned about doing it soon? Because Blizzard is in this territory of their player base, or at least their core player base, being very upset. And, you know, doing some Google foo, looking around the internet and trying to get a pulse on how a lot of gamers are feeling. There's a lot of sentiment that is games are lacking the soul that they once had. They're feeling empty. They're feeling like emptier experiences as bigger corporations have come in and made investments and wanted returns on those investments. And they've focused more on player engagement and less on player satisfaction.
Nothing, as far as Hearthstone is concerned, like, nothing shows that more than the current, like, event that was happening. Oh, so bad.
What happened there?
Like, they literally didn't give you anything, and they just wanted money. It was literally weird.
What did you
I don't
actually
know if it
like,
was part of, like, the... What's that?
What did you actually, like, do or get, if you get anything?
So there was the new, like, single-player campaign thing, and then you can also purchase a... Well, the newest, like, purchase thing was a new portrait, a Jaina portrait, with no voice lines, no new animation, nothing new about it, just the picture and some subtle animation, and also, and then you get 5 like mage packs, which are kind of worse than regular packs. It's kind of weird, but
it's all like specific to the mage class, right? Isn't
you get 5 mage cards, and then the same same rarity scheme applies. Then the single player campaign was really pretty lame, but that's besides the point. But like, yeah, it's like this weird. It was, I don't know if it's partially because of the COVID thing that like they had to slow down on a lot of things. Maybe it is kind of funny that there's so much complaints about Blizzard, but they keep. I mean, Overwatch was their newest like IP, right?
Yeah.
And that's still like hugely popular.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Like, it's not, like, it's kind of weird because, like, people want to complain about them so much, but they've still made games that are popular and people like them.
Yeah, that's kind of my point, though, is like, I'm thinking it's a vocal minority. So I'm sitting here going, okay, well, Mike Morhaime is going to exit Blizzard. He's going to create this new studio. He's going to make games for gamers like he wants to, right? And obviously, there's an audience there. That's what built Blizzard. But what does that ultimately look like now? You know, like I was saying, when they first came out, they were kind of the only game in town. Not entirely. Like, Valve was there too, but like, they're one of the only companies. Now it's like, okay, well, you got these huge titans of industry who have these, even Blizzard's original IPs. Like, where do you go from nothing at this point? And not to say you can't, but.
I mean, Riot was in the same situation.
Sort of. So didn't League of Legends get spawned out of a Warcraft 3 mod? Like,
right. So
not the gameplay itself, but like, you know, it's still they had this their own IP, own universe that they're building.
Defenders of the Ancients is where League of Legends came
from. Then it was grown into League of Legends. So League of Legends as its own wasn't its own IP. And I think they technically beat Dota out for coming out with, you know, a new Dota. You know?
Right, but are we going to get a whole host of new games from Dreamhaven that are just Blizzard remake games?
So
like, are they going to do their own MOBA? Are they going to do their own card game? Like,
I like Second Dinner. Second Dinner is a studio that was, I think it was kind of founded by Ben Brode, who's a previous game designer for Hearthstone, as well as, I know Jamara Kindred was the artist for Hearthstone, and one of the producers, I think, from Hearthstone joined them. And they decided to do, I mean, obviously, like, your veterans at a big company that worked on a successful IP, I feel like getting investors might not be, it's probably going to be difficult, but it's probably not going to be, like, obviously impossible.
Well, you've got a track record. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
But what they decided to do initially is, because they know that they are a no-name studio, is they actually are working on, it's like a Marvel... That no one knows what it is yet, but it's some sort of a Marvel-based game or project.
Sure.
Using an IP that's recognizable, and gaining traction for your studio that way. And actually, Blizzard did the same thing. Blizzard initially did games for other people. And Justice League, they did a 2D side-scrolling Justice League fighter game. Right. And that was one of their like first games that they created with people.
I think expectations are so high on Dreamhaven that they can't go down that road. Like, if they came out with a non-original IP out of the gate, I think people are going to be like, what is this? Like, I don't know.
Especially when it's like, he started off being we're an indie game company now or whatever.
Right, and then suddenly you're making some kind of sellout. So, like, I don't know.
This is what's funny is that, so I looked it up, and for clarification, Dreamhaven is it's a full game development studio, but they have two studios under their umbrella, basically, which is Secret Door, and there was one other one, Secret Door and Moonshot Games.
Right.
So it's probably like what Microsoft is doing right now, where they're buying out all these indie studios to work under them. I think Dreamhaven is the full thing, and these two studios are probably going to be working on two separate games under Dreamhaven.
I mean, Blizzard has done that in the past. Like, they had Blizzard North Team, which is who made Diablo 2. Like, they were two different Blizzards, technically. So.
Yeah. And so I think that's
a lot of studios.
I think it's a good idea to do it that way. And I think, honestly, if they did it that way, I wouldn't be surprised if they decided to go a route and have, you know, an existing IP that people know about and a non-one. But if I were to guess, I'd say, I don't know. I feel like this was such big news that went around, and so many people were talking about it. I just thought, like, there is no way that there aren't investors, like, chasing them right now. Like,
oh, they're definitely fine.
Let us invest in this.
But he'd only announce it if, like, he was already backed and everything.
Probably. He probably is.
Well,
but
he's
now.
Got plenty of his own money.
Imagine. He's got plenty of his own money.
Like, they're
got,
probably, they're sort of pulling a Harmonix with Guitar Hero, right? Like, they sell Guitar Hero to who? Activision? Weird. And then they bail, and then they make Rock Band. And,
right,
you know, like, oh, what? Like, they make an arguably better game. So I'm like, okay, interesting model to follow. But I guess, like, the real crux of this situation for me is thinking about, like, what made Blizzard games of the past feel like they had a soul. I hate saying it that way, because I think normal Blizzard games are fine too. But what I mean is, games don't have souls, Gavin. I guess what I should say is, this is the argument of hardcore Blizzard fanboys is, current Blizzard has no soul, old Blizzard's where it's at. And I'm sitting here going, why do people feel this way? Obviously, they're for two different audiences, right? But do we think that's the case? Or do we just think that it's two different design philosophies?
I'd say look at the success of Overwatch, because that was their newest IP. And Overwatch actually was what felt like the first breath of fresh air from Blizzard in a long time.
Yeah.
And I think the reason is because, I mean, for context, for those that don't know, Overwatch was Project Titan, this rumored MMO that ended up being confirmed and was in development for like 7 years. I don't know, some crazy amount of time.
Yeah.
And then it was canned. And then like a year and a half later, maybe a year later, suddenly we hear about Overwatch and we find out this is the remnants of Project Titan. So what ended up happening is, after Project Titan dropped, there was like 10, 15 people on the team or something like that, if I'm recalling correctly. I read an article about it a long time ago. And this small team got together and they're like, no, like, we love this idea. We love this IP. Like, what can we do with this? And they just sat down in a smaller scope, smaller group of people.
Right.
And they thought, what game do we want to make?
Right.
And I think that's how Blizzard even started. That's how their game started. It was a small group of people that got along, that were like-minded, that had a similar passion for certain types of games. And what these people decided on is, like, they were like, you know what, I miss Quake, I miss Unreal Tournament, like, I miss all of these first-person shooters from the 90s that were fast-paced and big and you died fast and it was explosive. And that's what they ended up recreating,
just lots and of flashing lights and
Yeah,
lasers.
And you know what? It worked.
My games,
it worked very well, and I'd say that, like, Overwatch was successful at recreating that feeling.
Oh, go ahead. Sorry,
I was gonna say, like, I just think that it's so much harder for something like that to happen when World of Warcraft started with a team of 40 people internally, and now it's a team of like 200 to 300 plus people. It's like, how do you it was hard enough probably to be cohesive with 40 people. Now, how do you try and bring this cohesion and this like same level of spirit and like excitement for this one type of game with that many people, with that many cooks in the kitchen, you know?
And also the thing that I think is interesting too, if we talk about Blizzard design philosophy, and I like to think of it in terms of like, okay, you had games that were experience focused, and then later on in Blizzard's career you had games that were focused on streamlining, right? They were focused on removing barriers to entry. And what I mean about this is World of Warcraft even starts this way, right? Like going back and playing the beginning of World of Warcraft Vanilla is really an interesting experience now, because at the time it was really novel and it was really like, oh, wow, I get to explore all this stuff and here's these quests and I'm doing these things. But playing it now, I'm like, this is it's an onboarding, which I was kind of aware of at the time, where it's like these quests that lead you through steps, like, okay, you learn this, you learn this, you learn this. And I play it now, I'm like, okay, it's very clear that they put training wheels on this game. And they did it on purpose, and this is part of the way that they build a player base of 12 million people or whatever at their peak. Previous to that, if we're talking about Diablo 2, you could start a character, you could build this character up, you could customize your skills, you could customize your stats, and you could make wrong decisions. And I think that that is sort of where the design philosophy diverges, right? It's are you making games that are about letting a player make mistakes and learn lessons and have maybe a frustrating experience? Or do you believe that games should be, yeah, I'm off work now, I'm relaxing, I don't want a frustrating experience, I want everything to just work perfectly and I just want to have a good time, I want to de-stress, and I want to walk away from it? And I think World of Warcraft is the first time when they started heading in that direction, and with every game since, they've gotten more and more like further in that direction. And it's not just Blizzard. I think it's the industry as a whole. Cause you look at like the backlash, I shouldn't say backlash, the pendulum swinging the other direction with Dark Souls, right? Like Dark Souls' rise to popularity comes straight out of this. It's a pendulum swing back the other direction from a design philosophy of sand off all the edges possible, streamline everything, don't let people make mistakes. That's how I feel about the situation. And I'm wondering too, because like that design philosophy came from a time before Activision had such a hand in Blizzard, that I'm like, is Dreamhaven even going to be able to achieve what old school Blizzard fans want them to achieve? And a lot of them might be referencing World of Warcraft in general, but I mean, outside of Blizzard, what do we think about the design philosophy of allowing players to make mistakes? I think that that's a valid, I think both of these are valid experiences, but I wonder about, are you losing something by sanding off all the edges?
It's kind of depends on what, I think it has just like a lot of different areas of it. Cause you want to appeal to as broad of a demographic as possible to make the most money.
Sure. Yeah. Oh, but, yeah, that's
and like, but I think, like, depending on the game, like, I think Overwatch or the games, the current trend of games right now is like the get in, play, and then bounce whenever you want, right? It's not, they're not, there's not a whole lot of story driven games, at least like AAA and, or like games in that, this.
Well, I would say that like, there's not a whole lot of games that people play regularly, like come back to every day to play, that are that aren't like what you're talking about.
Yeah. So like you got your PUBG, your Fortnite, then you got like, you know, Overwatch and all that stuff. But it's like they're all just casual games.
They're designed for a half an hour playtime block. Yeah, right.
You get in, you log in, you just play a few rounds, and you can leave. There's no like, there's like the behind the scenes story behind like Overwatch and stuff, like the lore and everything that people
don't even really have to pay attention.
But you don't see any of that in the game. And then like, Diablo 3 even felt like that, really.
Yeah, I was just gonna bring that up actually.
Yeah, because like, it's been a few years since I've played it, but I remember I just got in. I think I beat it in like less than a day, maybe, because I just like ran through it. And then I was like, okay, I'm done, I guess.
I mean,
and now over, now I guess, the it seems like you guys can talk more about this, but it seems like now it's all about like the what, like the same kind of thing where it's you're logging in with a bunch of people, you raids and stuff.
Oh, for Diablo. So
yeah,
I actually just revisited Diablo in the last couple months, and I played Diablo 3 when it released. I played it in beta. I was so like, oh my god, I can't wait for this, because Diablo 2 was a huge, you know, game that formed my opinions of games in my childhood. And I'm like, okay, Diablo 3 is going to be amazing. It's been years. We're ready to do this. And I remember playing it and being like, this is cool. I level up a character to like level 60 or whatever the max was at the time. And I was like, okay, yeah, that was neat, I think. But like, I don't want to keep playing. Like, I'm not feeling the same pull that I did in Diablo 2. So like, I stopped playing for a while. And then I came back and I played the PlayStation 4 version. And I was like, okay, this is kind of fun. And like, I'm playing it with my partner, Drea. And her and I at one point just go, why are we playing this? Like, there's no challenge here. There's nothing interesting going. Like, why are we even playing this? Like, neither one of us were interested in what the story was telling. At any rate, so I bounced off of it again that time. And then recently, in the last few months, I came back to Diablo 3 on PC because I was like, you know what? I'm going to give this another shot, because I think, Forrest, you and I were talking about it or something, and you were defending Diablo 3. And I was like, okay, you know what?
I remember
you know
that
what?
Conversation.
And I get back into heated. It. And I was I'm starting to play it again, and I'm like, you know what, this is not as bad as I thought it was. And I'm playing it, and I'm like, okay, cool, yeah, all right, this is fun. I'm playing a barbarian, and I had never leveled a barbarian before in Diablo 3, and I was like, okay, this is fun. I'm getting gear now. There was a huge problem with that early on. It's not really a problem anymore. And then I level up my barbarian all the way to max, and you get to the end game, or end game, I should say, right? And the end game from Diablo 2 is strikingly similar to the end of Diablo 3. However, there's a very key difference here. It's that at the end of Diablo 3, you do what's called rifts. And when you do a regular rift, you go to this randomly generated level and you fight randomly generated enemies. And you get some gear at the end of it, or gear drops throughout on a regular one. And then at the end of it, you get you fight a rift guardian who's a boss. And they drop a runestone or something. I forget what they're called. It's like a key to a greater rift. Mm-hmm. So you get this token... And then you go put it in the greater rift machine, which then makes another random level with another random boss. But this one's timed, which I'm not even really sure what the time thing does, because I've never ran out of time when I was doing one of these. I just always completed it within time. Yeah, I was like, oh, it's exciting. It, you know, whatever. And then you just get gear. You get a random drop of gear at the after you beat the rift guardian again. And then you just do the same thing over and over and over again. And the difference here, the major difference here that I think that I don't know where this got lost in translation, but this is the major difference between Diablo, the end game of Diablo 2 and the end game of Diablo 3, is that the end game of Diablo 2, you learned where certain gear dropped in the world, and you went and farmed the boss that would drop it. Mm. It was a treasure hunt that was in world.
Never did that.
And in Diablo 3, I don't like, it's just randomly, it's a gachapon, right? It's you put your token in, you spin the wheel, and you see what you get, and you just do it over and over and over again.
So you're not wrong, but
got him,
defense
boys.
Of it. Wrap it up. Well, no, it's like, I'm not gonna lie, I've put over like 400, 500 hours in Diablo 3. Like, I put a lot of time into it.
That's a lot of time.
Yeah.
That's a lot of time.
I think my first character.
I put that kind of time in Diablo 2, right?
So my question is like, what keeps drawing you back to it?
So I hop in at this point. I hop in during seasonal events. So there's seasonal characters where you just start fresh and you don't have any of the Paragon levels from your previous characters. You have no buffs, no access to any gear. Mm-hmm. You're just starting a character brand new.
Yeah.
And then the seasonal events usually have these seasonal quests. If you complete them, which are usually basic things like kill this boss on this difficulty level or something, then you get gear, and you get set gear. And it's basically like, if you play the game and do these couple of extra things, then at some point you get a free set gear and you get to try out this set of armor.
Mm-hmm.
It might not be the best version of that armor.
Well, for people that don't know, a set of gear is like there's six specific 6+ pieces. Sometimes it's 8, right? But there's,
usually there's a name attached.
There's
it's a name on them.
From 4 to 6.
And if you have more than one piece of it equipped, you get extra bonuses for having collected these special pieces of armor. And this is something that was from Diablo 2 that is also in Diablo 3. So
yeah, and I think they definitely got carried away with some of the set pieces in this, but that's besides the point.
The most flamboyant set armor you can find me.
Hey, I like the designs in Diablo 3 for the most part. But it's what's interesting to me with the greater rifts in Diablo 3 is that they literally just put it's a leaderboard, and there's a literal leaderboard you can look at to see how high of a greater rift did you get to. And that's actually where the timer comes in, is that if you can't do it before the timer gets there, then you lost the greater rift. I tried going into a greater rift with one of my old crusaders just the other day, and I couldn't remember what level I was at, but I was able to get into Torment 17 or something like that.
Right. So you're just like, let's try it. Yeah.
Yeah. I was like, let's try it. And that timer was flying. And I was like, right. Like, it wasn't the timer that was going fast. It was just, I was not killing things.
You were so slow.
Enough.
Yeah.
Yeah. I won't say that's going to be the most engaging or exciting type of gameplay or anything like that, but I get how it could still draw players in, right? It's literally like you're doing the grind that you're talking about, but on top of the grind that you're talking about, there's this extra thing where it's like, oh, and now I can see, because I got this piece of armor, now let's see if I can then do this tougher tier, which then would reward me with higher chance of getting this other armor.
Right.
On top of that, there's also these rare gems that you unlock at the end of Greater Rifts that you get to upgrade at the end of every Greater Rift.
So,
and those gems are very specific and offer new abilities and stuff, which are interesting.
I feel like this type of system is something that is existing in multiple Blizzard games now. And
yes,
it's something that just makes me question, like, okay, they're clearly doing this because it works, right?
Yeah.
This is clearly engaging enough, but is this actually working because people are excited to play it? Or is it working because it's tickling your endorphins, right? You're like, ooh, yeah, okay, like, is this a slot machine or is this a game, you know, like, well, and if you're coming from, and I'm not saying that it's wrong that people would play this kind of stuff, I want to put that out there, like, that's not what I mean. What I mean is
he's putting it out there.
Yeah.
Everybody,
he's throwing it out.
Cancel Gavin.
Get him.
shut him down.
What I'm saying is that from my design perspective and the way that I feel about games, I want games to be an experience, a learning experience. And I guess I probably err on the side of like being okay with more frustration than what people probably, than what maybe what I ought to be. Like, obviously you try to make a game as easy to play as possible, but I'm okay with people making the wrong decision and having to learn from it. I feel like games are a safe place for us as humans to experiment and try things and fail and realize that things don't work and have to make adjustments and learn things and change and think about, like, reapproach a situation differently.
I'm going to stop you right there because I don't know if you know what year it is. It's 2020. People don't have patience for that kind of stuff.
I mean, clearly that's wrong because Dark Souls exists, but whatever.
But, like, here's the thing. Like, well, I mean, Dark Souls is just... I like Bloodborne a little bit better, but
it's the same.
I also still have to play the newer one, the what's Shadows Die Twice or whatever.
Sekiro. Sekiro. Yeah. What's funny is like I don't even really like Dark Souls, but I will defend it on design principles.
Well, like I don't like Dark Souls because I don't like shield fighting. That's the thing I didn't like about.
That's why you like Bloodborne.
I like Bloodborne because it's dodging. Yeah. You know, there's a little bit more tactics to it, you know, just like pressing the shield button.
Well, there's a whole lot of rolling in Dark Souls.
Yeah, yeah. But I don't know. I found Bloodborne a little bit more engaging. I never owned any of the games. I just had roommates that had everything, so I'd try to play everything.
It's definitely a different pace, I would say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, but I was while you guys were talking, I was like wondering, or I was trying to think of like why, like, with the current like climate of gaming, it's all multiplayer, right?
Yeah,
so they have to
find
excuses to get people to play together, because like whether that's like raids from WoW,
yeah,
or you know, I mean, obviously, you know, PUBG, Fortnite, all those are clearly like multiplayer games.
Yeah.
But I think like that's also a, with the right, they're the where technology is nowadays and how connected everybody is, I feel like every game has to have some sort of multiplayer aspect to it. And I don't know, like, it was kind of weird playing, I mean, I was trying to think of, like, when I played Diablo 2 back in the day and why I liked it so much. I mean, I loved, like you were saying, like, you're building your character through this entire adventure, but, like, that character is yours, you know? Like, you can make mistakes, you can build it wrong, quote-unquote.
Yeah.
But the cool thing was that I'd be like, oh, I should have done this.
Yeah.
You know, and then you play again or whatever. But nowadays you don't have that. Like you could just look up the best builds online and you're like, well, now I'm just it's kind of weird how technology has taken the fun out of some games.
Yeah, well, and
just because
that's
you can
kind of,
you have the access to it.
So this is one reason why I kind of wanted to talk about Darkest Dungeon, but there's a term called wabi-sabi, which is a Japanese term meaning that something is better because of its imperfections. And I think what's happening now is that as things are getting sort of more and more perfect, things like the edges are being all sanded down and everything's getting so smooth and perfect and shiny, and you have a backlash of this, right? You have all these digital goods, and yet records, like music records, are some of the highest selling things that are still around. I think there's a reason why you have that dichotomy. You have these tactile, imperfect ways of listening to music because it has character, and then you have the other end of it, which is this fully digital, homogenous, like perfect experience, right? Like, I think we're seeing that in sort of almost all different avenues of artistic expression, is that you have these super polished things, and you have these things that are a rejection of the super polished thing. And I think indie games are really the ones that are carrying that torch. So to bring it back into the realm of Blizzard, I am curious what direction Dreamhaven ends up taking, right? Where it's like, are they going to be Silver Age Blizzard of Diablo 2, or are they going to be World of Warcraft pre-Activision, or right on the edge of Activision acquisition, right?
Like, so, speaking as a filthy casual,
I think we're all filthy casuals here.
Yeah,
that's what we should call the podcast.
Yeah, the podcast.
I pitched that name for.
We're not. No, speak for yourself.
I know I did.
I think there's a place, obviously, in design for the permanent decisions, the hardcore game mode type of game.
Oh, I think I definitely think there's a place for both of these design philosophies. I don't think either one is wrong.
I think maybe that's what I'm wondering is that, like, I think in the pursuit, I think you're onto something, in that something about being in the pursuit of perfection, right? Which is how a lot of World of Warcraft feels right now, at least when I play retail versus classic.
Yeah,
is that in classic, they unapologetically pursued something, whether they thought that was going to make everybody happy or not. And now it feels like nothing is added into the game unless they believe it's going to make that particular player base that plays that part of the game absolutely happy. And I, as much as like that sounds like that should be the case, if you're constantly making everybody happy, it's like it's that same thing of like if you have too much dopamine, it's like your brain just doesn't give a shit anymore after a while.
It's almost like and this is what's interesting, is it's the highs and lows, right? It's like it's if you aim for the middle, right, you don't get these really high experiences or these really low experiences. You get right down the middle. And right down the middle is not very memorable.
I mean, we talked about this even when we were designing our own games.
Yeah, this just came up with Bullets and Teeth and Aliens, yeah.
And it came up with my game, too, when we were talking about interest curves and stuff. Yeah. And looking at, like, I think when we mapped out the interest curve of my game, it was like it had a bump and then it just, like, sloped.
Tapered off.
Down.
Yeah.
And what it feels like for a lot of these, like for World of Warcraft and like retail mode, is it's like you get this bump and then it's just like a flat line.
Yeah.
And well, then that's it.
You
doesn't
want it to
get
be
like a
heart rate monitor of a cardiac arrest.
But it's like low, like a murmur almost. Like, but it's like it's still like up. Like it's still like generally high. But it's
you
like
really want a heart habits. Murmur is what you're looking for. You want
maybe
the,
that's
you want
what
a
I'm
murmur. You want
I'm around, I want right. a murmur. Murmur it up.
That's the type of game I like to play. the right. one that's exciting as a murmur of the heart.
Yes.
But it's like
a hiccuping constantly. Just
I think, yeah, there's a reason that you have that rest. And that was something that World of Warcraft had, is that it was kind of like, oh my gosh, I leveled. I know that now when I make the long trek back to the city,
oh man, that's so
now
weird.
I can talk to my trainer and get right. my skills. Right. Like, and, that's and what it used this, to be.
Right. And instead of it just like showing up right then, like, oh, I leveled up. I got my abilities. I'm just going to keep. There isn't a difference in kind, right? It's like, I got my abilities. Right. I can just keep going.
What's really upsetting to me, too, when I talk about Classic, one, when you talk about Classic, you're always going to get people that are like, shut up. You're just nostalgic. And like, I swear there's some good design stuff that was done there that 100%. Is not repeated now. But what frustrated me is when Classic came out, they actually had this short YouTube series that Blizzard released of all veterans of the original Warcraft team get together, including Jeff Kaplan, who works on Overwatch now.
Yeah.
And they were all talking about how much fun they were having playing WoW Classic. And like, I think they were all cheeky about it. And they're like, I think it's just fun because we made it. And I'm like, no, right. It's fun because it's fun. Stop it. It's just
good. I can't attest to this because I never liked WoW. But
so, well, okay. So coming back around to the weirdness of WoW, though, it's like you brought up the social aspects of online multiplayer gaming. And I think the reason why WoW was so addictive in the day is it took over your social life. Like, mm-hmm. if you play WoW by yourself, it's kind of boring. It's like, oh, I'm going to do some quests and like, okay, I'm kind of into this. But then like, you'll run into other people and suddenly you're in a group and suddenly you make friends. And then like, oh, well, let's meet up again tomorrow. And you meet up again tomorrow. And then you're running dungeons. Then you form a guild and then you start raiding and then you start doing this. And then suddenly people are counting on you to show up multiple times a week and you have to be there. Otherwise the raid doesn't happen. And I have to get off work and I have to get home and I have to log in immediately. So I make sure I'm there. And I can't even go to the bathroom because I got to be here and everybody's counting on me.
It was fun. It was really fun. Warcraft.
It's like, that's that was a fun game. Time. Shut up. It's a game. Get over it.
Right. No, I mean, the thing don't is, like, that was the experience back in the day, was that WoW became your social life.
And I'm still even convinced, too, that like when you and Drea were playing with Brina and I.
It's the original social media, if you think about it.
Wait, it's what?
It's kind of the original social media, if you think about it. Like, it was the original Facebook, really.
Yeah, except and Baron's chat stuff, with 4chan.
Like, and like socially, I think, like, you know, because like at that time there wasn't a whole lot of like.
MySpace was around and stuff. Yeah. But
I remember because I met a guy online that I ended up adding as a friend on MySpace, but he was like a 30-year-old stoner, and I was like in middle school, and I'm like, I don't know if I can be friends with you. I don't know if I'm allowed. My parents,
but
it
was
mad.
Like it was like it took the like weirdness out of making friends, I guess, because you're all playing this game, so you all have something in common.
You
so
already like, all had something in common. Yeah,
you already had something in common. But like, I forget where I was going with that. Dang
I
it.
Mean, what I was gonna say is like we played Gavin, you and me played with Dre and Brina just. What is that, like a month ago? About a month ago.
Yeah.
And I'm still convinced that, like, I could have played by myself and it would have been, like, it would have been okay, but I think that maybe was probably just going to be the nostalgia carrying me. If it was a brand new game, I can't guarantee I would have really been hooked enough to keep going.
Right.
But, like, we could have been doing anything in that game, but because we're all talking on Discord, like... We were killing zombies because four people on the same quest in Classic WoW takes forever.
Oh, God.
And we were killing zombies for like 30 minutes, and we just were talking about horror movies that we were watching.
Right.
Or had watched. And like that conversation made the whole thing go by, and like I didn't care that like it was taking forever to do this quest. It would come in every now and then.
Like, couldn't you have just been... talking about movies,
right?
Like,
it could have been, but that's what's weird.
Were you paying attention
like,
to this game? Was it the game itself fun, or was it just that you were talking to the friends you already have?
Like, right? I think this comes back around to the design philosophy of I want an experience that's not frustrating at all. It's like you basically create this experience where okay, I'm playing this game and I'm just doing these things and they're just kind of happening at me. So you make room for these social interactions, right? Like if World of Warcraft is tricking people into allowing it to take over their social life, they're like, okay, well, we need to design the beginning of this game in such a way that people can play it and not have to think too much about it and not get frustrated and bounce before they meet other people.
Mm.
So I'm
that,
like,
I mean, that would have been smart.
Right. And
if that's what they did.
Right. And whether they did that on purpose or not, I'm not 100% sure, but I think that's what ultimately happened. And I think that that design philosophy has influenced not only future Blizzard games, but it has influenced other games that are trying to achieve a similar thing, because yeah. It's the golden goose, right? If you can get a game to take over someone's social life, that's where all the money's at. You look at all these games that are making billions of dollars. That's why. It's like, it's their game. They come home, they play that game. They interact with the community of those people,
mm-hmm.
you know? And it's not just computer games that do this. Like Magic the Gathering is the same way, but they don't, I don't think it's as, I don't want to use the term predatory, but, but I also kind of do. I think it's
not quite the situation.
I think it was designed with that philosophy in mind, and whether or not that was purposefully what's the word
I can't
I'm looking
imagine
for? Like if they were purposely trying to do it with a negative mindset, or if it was, hey, wouldn't it be really awesome if we could just exist in this world together and it ultimately equaled people addicted to it and making tons of money. Oops, you know, I don't think they thought about it early on.
I mean, I don't think they expected it to be like as big as it was.
Right.
You know what I mean? I think they knew it was they're gonna make money off it, but I don't think anybody could have predicted like that much money.
they had a documentary that came out where they talked about it, and they were like, "It'd be cool if we sold like maybe a million copies," and they sold that in like. It was like the first 2 weeks or something like that. Like,
yeah.
And it was unheard of. And they went to a signing of the game. Obviously the beta had been out and obviously some hype had been brought about the game, but a group of them went to a signing at like a Fry's near the studio in Irvine or wherever they were at the time. And there was this huge line like near Fry's, and they were like, oh, I wonder what they're all waiting for. And then they get to the front of Fry's and they're like, oh, like this is for us. Like, oh my God. Like they were so, because it sounds like they were just in crunch mode for like a year, like nonstop working on this thing. And so I imagine like, yeah, you wouldn't probably know. Like, how would you know that they're going to have that big of an impact? And
then you get up on stage and you announce Diablo Immortal.
So one thing that I will say that bums me out, but I understand how this happened. It bums me out, but then at the same time, it's like I see where it's coming from and it kind of excites me. Is I watched I had to watch this like intro to Blizzard like culture video.
Sure.
And it was given by one of the like early members. I can't remember his name. Tall guy with a deep voice. But he was talking about
Chris Benson?
No.
Oh, okay.
It was Frank something.
Okay, well.
But he
Frank Blizzard. That was his name.
Yeah, Frank. He was he was talking about basically, you know, like people that join Blizzard and what like Blizzard's mission ultimately is. And he kind of talked pretty it was nice cuz he talked like bluntly and honestly about the fact that like they do have to kind of make investors happy. Like investors are what keep their mm-hmm. games going, and if we need them to be happy, like then something does kind of need to change. And really he talked about that the idea and the growth of Blizzard is like, you know, Disney started with Mickey Mouse,
mm-hmm.
and like what does Blizzard start with when they start with Warcraft, you know? Like,
okay, whoa.
And
back up. Did they actually mention Disney, or are you
they did mention Disney and they
holy
mentioned empires
shit.
Like that. So and okay. That's what's weird is like I hear that and I'm like, I don't want you to be that, because yep. I'm not happy with what's happening
yep.
in movie theaters right now.
Yep.
But at the same time, I know that me as a 13-year-old so badly wants a Blizzard theme park.
Yeah.
And so, like, I want it, but also don't want it for the company as a whole. But I understand that, like, this is only natural if a company grows this way, I guess. But then you look at a company like,
spend that money on
for instance, you look at Bungie that created Destiny 2, and they bought themselves out of Activision because they're like, no, we're not doing this.
This actually
we're doing whatever we want.
This confirms a suspicion I had early on with World of Warcraft and the way that they designed their art style, the way they the things that they chose to put in their game and why. I'm like, this, when I was playing it early on, I think I don't even know if it was vanilla, but it may have been like Burning Crusade or when I came back in Cataclysm for a minute. I was playing it and I was like, this feels so Disney to me. And it was like the way that the it was the art direction, it was the choice of how to like to sand off the experience and to make the experience as smooth and easy to digest as possible. It was the removing of any barriers to entry. It was so Disney to me that I was like, oh, this is so weird. And I was just getting this like, I remember getting this very Disney vibe, and I couldn't quite put my finger on it. And the fact that you mention that they talk about Disney, internally, I'm like, whoa, like, all right, I guess.
That talk was given only,
that far off.
It was only a couple of years ago. So I don't know if they were considering that at the time, but I will say that if you look at what I really love doing, I didn't go to Disneyland for like several years. This might be kind of getting off topic, but it's related to Blizzard. And it wasn't until I went to Disneyland again after not going there for a few years that I was actually finally able to like appreciate it, because I had gone when I was like, you know, a teenager, and I was like, I want to go on the rides, and I didn't care about anything else. But then going to Six Flags versus going to Disney, and you see the buildup to rides and to attractions at Disney, and they really fully immerse you in what the story is. Like going to Indiana Jones ride, and like you're surrounded by this stuff.
Yeah.
Like when you enter the actual tomb, that's the Universal Studios.
Well, that's true. But I was just going to bring up the fact that Universal does a good job of it too. But
I don't know. It's been a while since I've been there. But maybe. But either way, you go to Six Flags, and Six Flags is just like, you want roller coasters, motherfuckers? And like, here they are. Like, they don't care.
Go get your.
Like, there's no build up to it. There's no immersion. And that's what's great is, like, Disney doesn't have the most fun attractions, but they definitely immerse you in it and get you excited for it. It's to the point where, like, you don't care that it's not as exciting as some of the roller coasters at Six Flags, because, like, it's just fun and it's lighthearted. And that extra touch that they put in all over the park, that same touch is given to, I'd say, most Blizzard games and most, I'd say, games that focus a lot on art. Right now, so Riot Games focuses on that a lot too.
So I went to Disneyland not that long ago, and I hadn't been since I was a kid. And I went back, and I remember, like, this was just a few years ago, and I was like, I don't know how I feel about this now, like, because it feels like such a curated, manufactured experience that I was like, am I
really?
I had a like the first day we're there, Drea was kind of mad at me because like she grew up in California, so she had gone a lot, and I don't think she ever had that sort of like years apart to get that disconnect, and so she was kind of upset because I was like, I don't know, like this is all right, but then like after I got over myself and went, you know what, I'm just going to be here and I'm going to forget about how corporate this is and how much they've like designed everything to pull money out of my pocket. And I'm just going to enjoy myself. And once I did, everything was great. But I had to get over that hump. And I think about like the types of experiences that really last for me, and things like hiking somewhere and exploring and getting lost and having to find my way somewhere. Those are experiences that I remember like very vividly.
It's those unexpected adventures, you know?
Right.
Where it's like you can't predict everything. Like you go to like a theme park or whatever, you know what you're going to get.
Yep. They deliver the same experience every time. And it's very interesting because that is also the design philosophy, I think, of Blizzard is they want to deliver the same experience to every person who plays their games.
See, that's what's funny is that not to keep going on the Disneyland
that's fine.
References, but
it's the biggest distraction.
What's funny is like, I think it's funny once you dropped the whole, like the cynicism of it, right?
Yeah.
That's where I came from with it, is that I went in and I was like a little cynical, But when you enter it and thinking of it as a kid, and you think, like, when you hear things like that Walt Disney was so particular about the size of the castle and the mm-hmm. placement of it, because he, what he would do is get down on his hands and knees to be the height of a child,
right?
Because he wanted this experience for kids.
Right.
And, like, I think if you drop the cynicisms of the real world and you realize, like, what if this was your first time here? And you're blown away by, like, they fucking got some guy to design a pillar with snakes on it just so that I can go in a little dune buggy for a little bit? Like, are you kidding me? Like, why? They didn't need to do that.
Right.
But they did that. They did all these small things all over. And I'd say that actually I still fucking love going to Disneyland. I'm sorry.
I'm not ragging on it. Like I said, I had a great time after I turned off my cynical brain. So.
Right. But one thing that they still do that is still amazes me is every time I've gone, coincidentally, there has been some event that I'd never heard of and didn't know what was happening because I'd like purposefully like wasn't looking at all like the paperwork and stuff like that we get saying like,
yeah,
go to
go,
this
yeah.
event. And we were walking down Main Street in Disney one time, and like the lights just started going down, and a lot of people were waiting, and we were like, okay, great, like there's a parade coming or something, but all the lights went down, and then bubbles and confetti started showing up, and we were like, I mean, that's kind of cool, but all right, whatever. And then like loud Disney like electro music started playing in the themes of all the Disney like movies, and we're like, the fuck is going on? And then there was a laser light show that was being projected onto all the sides of the buildings that moved down the street and like went to the beat of the music, and I was like, all right, this is fucking amazing. I don't know what's happening here.
Disney first scene kids.
That's why you never look like what you're getting.
But that's the thing, is like I think it's funny that you guys are like, you know what you're gonna get, and I'm like, I never know. Like I don't know what I'm gonna get.
Those,
when I
that
go
was
there.
One of those like nice little surprises, you know.
Yeah. There's always just enough of those, though. But that's, I mean, to bring it back to Blizzard, I think that same kind of design philosophy has crept into Blizzard games nowadays, and that, like, you play retail WoW, and I think something about them and their designs were like, wouldn't it be great if people found treasure chests, but just a little more often? And so, like, when you go, you see treasure chests on your mini-map, and it tells you, like, go here, and there's some treasure there. And before, it would be this random spontaneous thing you'd see out in the world, and you'd go into this centaur tent and you'd be like, wait, is that an object I can interact with? And then you right click it and you're like, oh, whoa, there's a chest in here. And like, yep. The difference though between that, right, where it's like, it's almost like someone wanting you to find something versus someone that actually wants to see you struggle in an Easter egg hunt, right?
Like,
where it's like someone
I'm gonna compare that experience to Breath of the Wild.
Because
the pinging when you're by a shrine, you're like, you know it's around. You're like, where is it?
Yep.
Where is it?
Yeah.
You gotta hunt it down a little bit.
You gotta hunt it down.
And there's also the Kurok seeds, right? So like,
yeah.
That game. I think the Kurok seeds are the best system in the entire game. Is that you're rewarded for just exploring random places. You go somewhere and you're like, wait, that rock looks weird. Let me move that over here. Mm-hmm. I got a little thing, you know, like, oh, I got rewarded.
And like,
for
even the way
experimenting,
that Breath
exploring
of the Wild like tells you where like certain shrines are, it's a puzzle in itself. Each like almost like I think like half of them, right, they're like puzzles that you can't like you'd only find by talking to people and like looking at stuff. And so, like, I think, like, that kind of experience is, like, so much more rewarding than like, just, hey, there's a treasure chest over there. Go get it.
Yeah.
It's something that encourages actual genuine, like, want for discovery and to see what's there.
So I'd wonder if Blizzard had done something like the Breath of the Wild system instead of just, like, a locator on the map where it just kind of like pings like and gives you hints. Like, I wonder if that would make like a lot of some of the experiences more like engaging. Like, it's like, I feel like there's not a whole lot of exploration in WoW anymore.
They've removed basically all of it.
Well, there is a lot of exploration. It's just whether it's satisfying exploration.
You know what's so interesting too to think about
around,
is like,
but there's not like mysteries.
So if you even start to follow the Disney design philosophy further and think about what raids in World of Warcraft are now, they are rides, they are roller coasters. Yeah. And you get in line by queuing up for the raid, and then you go and have the exact experience you're supposed to have. It unfolds the same way, just like it did last time, and then you come out of it and you stand around and then you do it again.
Yo, is that I don't know what.
Hey guys, let's go get in line for Scholomance. I want to get in line for Molten Core. We didn't buy the fast pass, kid. We're going to be standing in line a long time.
Hey. Blizzard doesn't do fast passes.
Yeah, no shit. Maybe they should.
They should.
There's the new microtransaction. Watch. Yeah, that's, you can that's fast what's pass the queue. What?
Is it still $15 a month?
You heard it here first. You can pay $2.99 to skip the queue and into that dungeon.
I've been reading the Well Played Game, which we talked about from one of our previous episodes.
Yeah, the Root episode.
When we were talking about Root. And there's something I read today that, one, it felt like I was being called out because I definitely caught myself doing this. But this is actually talking about Blizzard and that design philosophy and where they've gone, as opposed to something like Breath of the Wild, which came out later, right? After Retail WoW has come out, which had a lot of designers, had a lot of people. And all this being said, don't want to speak for you two, but I'm sure like we're not shitting on these designers by any means. They're creating a different experience than what we're saying we technically are preferable to.
Well,
right,
to defend the design philosophy, the Disney design philosophy. Like, look at the success of Disney. Like, you can't argue that
it's
they're
accessibility.
Not
and it's
right. It's just a different experience
in some way.
Some people like to go hiking. Some people like to go to Disneyland. Neither one of those experiences are better or worse than the other.
Right.
That's all. I prefer hiking, but I also like Disneyland. So whatever.
You could get attacked by a bear if you're hiking. So you got to think about all the.
That's true. Yeah.
That's a high if I've ever. But you can also see some deer.
There's no bears at Disneyland. That's true.
There's
the Berenstain Bears.
Berenstain Bears. That's
there's
those
this
are the
part
only
Disney?
Bears that give you hugs.
No, it's not Disney. There's this part in this book.
Splash Mountain. There's a bear.
Jesus. It was talking about this guy. I was trying to teach the author, Bernard DeCoban, about a game. And he kept prefacing it before teaching it. He was like, it's kind of a complicated game. Like, are you guys sure you want to play? And he's like, yeah. And he's like, well, okay, we're going to need like 3 to 5 people. And he's like, great. I happen to have 3 to 5 people here. And he's like, okay, but like, do you guys really want to play? And they're all like, yeah, of course. We all want to play. Keep prefacing it. And then finally, throughout the game, the guy keeps saying things like, isn't this fun? Do you guys want to stop playing? Don't you love this game? Are you sure you want to play? Like, stuff like that.
Mm-hmm.
And the guy didn't realize that from needing that validation of, hey, isn't this fun? Are you guys okay? Like, are you guys having a nice time? By being so needy, you are ruining the game.
Yeah.
You are ruining the experience. You're not allowing people to fully experience it themselves, right?
Right. Yeah.
In the same way that it's almost like, imagine Breath of the Wild if you didn't find a shrine in the last 30 minutes. Something popped up that was like, hey, there's a shrine over there. you haven't found one in a while.
Imagine if Breath of the Wild had Clippy. Is that what you're telling me?
Clippy. Right.
Hey, I noticed that you spelled a few words wrong there. You need some help there?
And I'm not saying that
I've noticed that you haven't been eating the proper food.
Oh my God, it could have been Navi. They could have just put Navi in the game.
Right,
like,
they could have had Navi.
Hey, listen! All the time. It would have been great.
And even Breath of the Wild knew we don't need that.
Yep. They learned that you don't need Navi.
All this being said, I do hope that Dreamhaven goes... I mean, I don't want to say they go an indie route because I don't even know what that means anymore. Dauntless was made by an indie studio.
Indie route means
big
like
indie,
very experimental these days. Like, you look at some of these indie games that like I'm interested on Steam, and it's more of the technology or like not the technology but the concept. They're like more like concept games than anything. Like they're taking like one particular mechanic and they just try to build something random out of it. Yeah, you're looking at like that game we were talking about, or me and I think I was talking to you, Gavin, about it. Was it the city builder one? Townscaper.
Townscaper.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Where it's like it looks really interesting, like just like and satisfying, but like there's no game there yet. So like obviously the developer, he's trying to build it on the fly, like he's asking for ideas and things like that. I think in one of the, it's just an experiment, but the technology and the concept he's making.
What seems to be the pipeline is you have an indie studio or an indie game that comes out that is sort of a proof of concept, right? Let's take PUBG, right? Which started as DayZ, which was a mod to Arma, which basically was like, oh, wait a minute, there's something here. And then PlayerUnknown's Battlegrounds shows up, and then that gets taken to fruition, I guess. But even then, it's still indie, and it's weird and clunky. And then you have a bigger game studio show up and take that idea of a battle arena and turn it into Fortnite. And like it's almost like these indie studios are the ones doing the innovation, and then these big studios are just swooping in and taking their ideas. And it's like, I don't know how I feel about that, because I'm like, well, the people who made PUBG, and don't get me wrong, they did just fine, but like, you have these big studios that don't actually need to do any of this innovation, because they're just waiting for an indie to pop up as the next big thing, and then they clone it, and then they know how to monetize it better.
I think that's why Microsoft is just going through and buying all these indie studios, because they're like, right, let's cut out us. Let's go straight to them. Go straight to the source. Like,
we don't need to make it if they make it for us.
I mean, at least they're buying them and paying them. There's a difference. Like, you can't trademark game design. Like, you can't you can't copyright game mechanics. So,
but it's like, I also don't want to like say anything, like, because like the people that make the designers and everything for Fortnite are also very passionate about,
right, and they're improving Fortnite upon what's there, don't get me wrong, but the innovation happened before they came along, you know what I mean?
Yeah, but I mean, that's kind of the case with any new like game mode. I mean, how many Quake Quake clones? I mean, Overwatch is clearly like a Quake inspired game. All these FPSs, like they're the same game. Like, I mean, honestly, PUBG is basically just an FPS, but you know, and then you build on that, and then you build on the next thing. Now you can, Fortnite, you can build things, craft things on the fly.
Well, it's so interesting.
Just adding
too,
more elements onto it. And
I mean, even like League of Legends was born out of the same kind of design thing that happened, right? It's like you had somebody who modded Warcraft 3 and created Defenders of the Ancients, and then they end up making their own game, which is League of Legends, but they sell, like, did they like sold the name Defenders of the Ancients to Valve, right? Like, there's such a weird history there.
Yeah, I thought there was something in that, like, the team broke off or something, like, the initial developers, and, like, one went to Valve and worked on Dota 2, and then the others were like, nah, we're going to go and make, like, League ourselves, and they did that. I honestly don't know, though. I'm not as familiar with that story.
And then look at the Auto Battlers.
And now that's happening with Auto Battlers. We're
right? They made Auto Chess. Then Riot made Team Fight Tactics or whatever. Now there's there's other ones out there, but like those are the, and then Hearthstone has Battlegrounds.
And I honestly think that this is still like the early days of Auto Battlers, which is what's so funny is that like there was the initial Auto Chess games or whatever, and like immediately there were some mods turned to full games from some of these major developers, and like I'm not saying that they weren't done well. I think that when I played Underlords and I played Team Fight Tactics, and like they're interesting, it was hard for me to get into them. They were still fun, but like I'm just not as big a fan. I'm not as familiar with like the heroes in those games. Whereas Hearthstone Battlegrounds, you don't really need to know the cards beforehand. Like, you just get them and you read them and you go, okay, that'll be good, I guess. It feels like it's still super early in the development of that idea, in the development of that type of game.
Right.
And that's what's so funny is I feel like it almost missed the indie step. And it's like already there's these major auto chess, auto battlers out there.
Right.
And well, I'm very excited. I want to see an indie studio take that and then do something different with it.
Yeah. Do a reverse. Yeah.
Right? Well, that was Overlord, right?
Okay, so we're getting a little bit into the weeds here. So why don't we wrap up our thoughts on Blizzard, Dreamhaven? We kind of like. I think we're all kind of in agreement that we're hoping for a divergence from where Blizzard is now. I mean, obviously you'd want to do that anyway. You don't want just like a mini Blizzard to pop up again, right, and make the same games. So I doubt that's what they want to do anyway. So
it's kind of weird. It's like any game company can become a Blizzard, like if they're popular enough. You know, once you make so much money, you're not indie anymore.
Sure. I mean, the way that I think about Blizzard, like Blizzard was foundational to computer games as we know it. Like there's such a Goliath in computer games that like they've shaped what computer games are since they've since Warcraft, really. So I'm curious to see if the same kind of thing happens with Dreamhaven, if they're able to capture that lightning in a bottle again and create things that are innovative and push the industry forward and are driven by passion and not profit. So we'll see.
Well, that's going to do it for this episode of the Distraction Makers Podcast. If you'd like to ask a question or help us test our games, or maybe if you're working on a game of your own, join us over on our Discord channel. You can find the link in the description below. If you're enjoying the show, make sure to give us a 5-star review on whatever platform you're listening to this podcast on, and we will see you next week.